college community to use our resources wisely and well to represent all members of our community fairly, to make decisions that promote the common good. We recognize our responsibility to the past and the future, and the rights and needs of both individuals and the college. As trusted servants, we seek guidance on our deliberations and our efforts here today. May we act wisely and well. In your name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. County, we have no public comment, so we can move on to the next agenda item, which is the president's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things I'd like to share with the board. I did send out to you all a while back where we stand with the end of the legislative session. I have some good news in that regard. We did, what I sent out said 3.4 million, it's actually 3.7 million, so we're happy about that. Everything that I sent to you is all part of the budget with the exception of the Venice capital project, the Venice Science Building. So the only thing that sort of sits out there on its own and has the potential to be vetoed is that science building in Venice. Everything else is part of the overall budget, so the governor would have to veto the budget in order for those things to be vetoed. But as of today, the governor has not yet received the budget. So when the governor gets it, then we have, I think, 30 days for the governor to sign it. So we're pretty pleased where we stand on there. There were a couple pieces of legislation that came out of that. I also shared with you, one is some language about a funding model being required. We believe this is good news. It very closely emulates the criteria of the model that Dr. Hale and I worked on and our colleagues at Valencia throughout the course of the year. So we think if that should happen, it's going to be good for our college because it will take into consideration equity. And if you look at the model, State College of Florida is one of the most productive institutions in terms of outputs relative to the funding input that we get. And so if this equity kicks in place, we could see more resources funded to the State College of Florida. So we're looking forward to that and that discussion as we move forward. The other thing was about accreditation. Accreditation is a really big deal. We have to be accredited in order to be awarded federal aid, and a good number of our students receive aid of some sort. So it's really important that we be accredited. Through the legislation, they said that you can't have the same accrediting agency in multiple cycles. So you can have, for us, it's SACS. In the next cycle, we would have to have another accrediting agency. Fortunately for us, because of the way that the timeline reads, we've already had our 10-year visit in 2015. Our midterm report was 2020. So we're so far toward the reaccreditation time that we can continue with the agency that we have, and then in the next cycle, we would have to be looking at a different accrediting agency. This is a fairly substantial undertaking. Ryan hasn't fallen out of his chair yet. He's trying to stay optimistic about it, but we've bought some time. This particular piece of legislation passed from a very political perspective, and we're hoping before the next 10-year horizon comes by that maybe some language could be tweaked to say may rather than shall or something like that that would change what we might have to do in the future. But for right now, we've kind of dodged that one, at least for the next 12 years. But shortly after we get reaccredited with SACS, we will have to start looking at another one. So we can't wait until that 10-year period of time is up before we look for another agency. One of the other things that legislation did is also said we have to have a super majority of the board to approve any tuition or fee increases. We've been very fortunate. Usually we have all of the board members in agreement if we try to go down that path, and we haven't in many years except for the few that we were given the go-ahead to do. Interestingly enough, there are a number of boards like ours who have vacancies on your board. So again, if supermajority is of the number you should have rather than the number you have, for some institutions, the ability to get to supermajority just doesn't exist. So it's going to be an interesting Again, another interesting thing.
So is it a supermajority of those present or a supermajority of the complete board?
Right now, the interpretation is it's supermajority of nine,
okay.
of our nine. So if we only had five, we could never reach supermajority, for example. The other thing I did share with you is that we did get the official notice now that the deadline for spending the HERF funds has been extended to 6/23. So we've bought ourselves a little bit of breathing room in that regard. So that's all good news. Dr. Fritsch and I are leaving after we break this evening to go down to Naples because tomorrow we have the opportunity to present our two baccalaureate degrees to the State Board of Education for approval. That's the baccalaureate degree in exceptional student education and in elementary education. We have going with us the Executive Vice President of Human Resources from the Sarasota School District to speak to the need, how many teachers they try to recruit every year, how many openings they have, and where they're able to find those teachers or not. We also have John Annis from the Brancic Foundation, who will speak to their long-term relationship working with the State College of Florida when it came to trying to address the nursing shortage, and also working with us on an emerging educators program as one avenue to create additional teachers. So that's really good news. We have nobody coming from Manatee School District. They have a few things they're trying to deal with on their own right now. So that's not surprising, and I've spoken with the chancellor, and she's fine with that. We did not get a letter of support from the University of South Florida as we had anticipated. As you all know, they withdrew from offering education, and then they came back into the game after we had already submitted our proposals and received funding, and we're headed down this path. We don't know what their game is, what their game plan is. What we know is we have how many students who have identified as wanting to pursue education degrees?
200 and something came out of that assessment.
Pardon?
200 plus.
200 plus. So when we start this program in the fall, we immediately can start preparing students and not wait for what may or may not be coming from another direction. So we're really happy about that. Again, the chancellor tells us that we're going to, you know, that's going to be fine. Everybody understands the reconsolidation and the one university thing and how much dysfunctional effort that's caused on behalf of USF in the meantime. So I think we're going to be good. So we'll be up there tomorrow morning. Hopefully we'll be coming back shortly. We have 5 minutes, count them five, to make our case. They don't like any agenda item to take longer than 5 minutes, so we're off to the races. The other thing I wanted to say thank you to many board members who are sponsors of Evening Under the Stars that's coming up. Not this coming weekend, but the next weekend. It's going to be a fantastic event. We have the POPs conducted by our own Dr. Robin Bell, who will be providing the main music for the evening. And so, again, thank you. Get the word out. This is 2 years. We haven't been able to do it, so we're back. And it's going to be a little bit different. So I hope to see you all there and bring some friends. And Madam Chair, that's my report.
All right, thank you. And now Dr. Hale is going to give us our mission moment.
Tonight I'm going to be talking about the fall enrollment from 2021. We're going to look at some trends, some student retention and persistence numbers, and student success metrics for the fall. This first chart we've seen a few times, it relates fall enrollment to the unemployment at the time. Prior to COVID, our enrollment followed unemployment very, very closely. COVID has thrown kind of a wrench in that, but beginning to look a little bit different. So those are those numbers. And you can see the prior years and just follow up right along. These are our revenue generating load hours for the previous five fall semesters. This one is the average class size. And there's a couple things weighing in this at the moment. The class sizes have been smaller for the past two terms, or past two fall terms, but we had a number of courses that we were able to run using HERF funds to run low-enrolled courses for continuity's sake. So students were coming to campus and taking that class and expecting to see the class to be able to graduate. Even though there were a lower number of students coming, we were still able to run those courses because we had additional funding. So that brought down those numbers a little bit from where we might have expected them. Persistence and retention. The top number is from that fall term beginning to the spring following. That has come down a little bit over the past two falls. However, the retention, which is that beginning fall to the following fall, so 2021, the last number there we have is beginning 2020 and ending 2021, is actually up a little bit from the prior 2 years. So that number is a really important one for us. That's the number of students that are continuing on from fall to fall. That leads then to graduation, which is the metric by which the funding formula that Dr. Brooksfield spoke of relates to graduates, not enrollees. So kind of a shift in the way that funding could possibly occur if they look at the model that way, and we would be well poised. The national number for this, for institutions of our type, really difficult to find that fall to spring number, but the fall to fall number they were looking at about 52%. So we're up a little bit over where the national average is there as well. Course completions per attempt. There's a little bit of decline over those same two falls. It's come up a little bit, fall 21. Really remarkable when you consider all the disruptions that students were going through at that time with COVID. Changes in some cases in modality, if they were used to face-to-face learning, they moved to online learning. To have kept it this high is really a testimony to the student support services and the faculty here really working hard with students through some really difficult circumstances.
Dr. Hale?
Yes?
So, if it's 81%, then looking at that the other way, like the course dropout rate would be 19%?
Yeah, they're getting a E, a W, or an F in the course. So they're either getting a failing grade or they've withdrawn from the course.
Or they're withdrawing. Okay. Okay.
Race ethnicity by year. The most remarkable piece here that stands right out is an increasing trend. It's something we've been focusing on in our goals. Hispanic student population from 2017 to present has risen considerably. The Hispanic population in college-age students that are enrolled in this area, in our service area, is about 18.6%. So we have considerably higher than what the other institutions in the area are running. And those numbers, there's about 12.7% of our local population that's Hispanic. So it's considerably higher than the population in general. Although that might not be considering how that student age.
Dr. Hale, how has that grown in comparison to our growth? So do you have trends on what Hispanic age students, how that population has grown? So are we seeing more of the pie, or are we just keeping up with the growth that's happening in the region?
That's a good question. I'd have to check back on that and see how the growth in that. But we're ahead with less than 13% of our regional population being Hispanic students. We're proportionally, we have a greater number proportionally. I have to look to see how that, because that could also have just carried with growth as well. I'll get an answer for that. And then the gender trends by year. You can see that our male students, and we obviously have some things that'll be emphasized there, but our male student trend. I did look and find that a few things, technical colleges actually skew kind of the opposite direction. So those that are offering other certifications, different than ours, skew a little bit differently there. So those are the trends for gender. And Brittany is going to give you a few things on what we're doing.
Thank you, Dr. Hale. All right, so what we're working on right now, the exciting stuff I get to report out on. First of all, our fall applications. You will see when we took this snapshot, we were up 570 applications. As of today, when we ran the numbers, we were up 590 applications from October 1st through the 29th today. So looking at last year's numbers from that time frame to this year's numbers, 590 applications. I will share with you one initiative that helped to boost our applications, and that was our free app February campaign. This was a campaign we partnered with our communication and marketing department to offer free applications if they put in a promo code, free app February. So these are just a few of the different promotional pieces that we highlighted. We didn't announce this early or prematurely, so it came out at the beginning of February because we didn't want students waiting. We did address if anyone said, I just submitted last night. We would talk to them about it, but this was a major event that we wanted to see if it was worth the time and energy to put in to see if we could boost our applications, because that gives us contact information. That gives us an opportunity to begin a relationship with the students. From our free app February campaign, we were hoping for a 10% increase in our February applications. We had almost a 55% increase in applications. It was phenomenal. Yes?
So on both this and the previous slide that had just 21 and 22, I don't have enough context to know, because 21 was a funky year, as was sort of 20. What is that, do you know what that looks like over time? Is that just a two-year base there? I'm not sure how much that is real and how much that is larger issues.
We are increasing in apps. And the other piece that you were touching on, this free application campaign didn't skew that trend in growth of applications. So we are seeing more students interacting. One of the things that I think about now is that post-COVID, we are seeing more commitment from students earlier rather than the waiting game. A lot of families would sit back and wait to see what institutions were doing. So I think they're starting to get back into the routine of being able to work with school counselors, our traditional age students, and get those applications in. So this was a really big win for us as far as applications. So 945 compared to 610 that we saw last year. Some other events, because we know it goes far beyond just the applications coming in. Over the spring break for Manatee and Sarasota counties, we had an open house event, a spring, the campaign is up there, College Plans Up in the Air. We had an event at Venice, and we had an event here, and we had 125 people come during their spring break to talk to us about college. We had students fill out applications. We even had students that were admitted and they wanted information on next steps. So that was a really good campaign.
And that was the first time, right, from Fort Trump?
The first time since COVID that we were able to bring that back in person, yes. Some other initiatives, since we did the free app February, this is an initiative that we're looking at for our South region. In Port Charlotte right now, we are the closest community college. And so they're leaning on us. Almost 100% of the school district is free or reduced lunch. And they are struggling with getting students into learning about higher education. They're also struggling with their FAFSA completion. So we're looking at possibly piloting an event where we can offer them a free application if we come in. We can also help them complete their FAFSA. And if they enroll in fall classes, we can use recruitment funding to help scholarship a summer class to get them started. So these are some of the initiatives we're trying to work on very closely with our school districts to help boost our enrollment. We have ongoing orientations. This is something that's really unique. So for example, if I was a student and I applied in October, I'm excited, I'm coming to the State College of Florida. Now what? I wait till orientation. When is typical orientation? Maybe May, maybe June, maybe July. We're doing rolling orientation. So once you're admitted, you can come in, you can start those next steps, and then we'll bring you back to do your enrollment, or we can do it virtually, or we can have everything set up and say, okay, your enrollment time frame's open, you can now enroll in your classes. So it's an opportunity to engage and keep that conversation going versus losing them maybe through the winter months. The other piece that we're going to try is an evening orientation. It's an opportunity to look at maybe our non-traditional students or our traditional students that are working and the times just don't work. So we're looking at having it open this time at night as they come in for an orientation. Maybe there's childcare provided at this time. I spoke to someone at Bayshore, and she goes, my husband's coming. And he let me get through, got my teaching job, and now we have childcare, so now he can go back. So it's those types of things of she's going to be able to come home, he can then come for orientation versus trying to do it during the day. Degree Preview Day is a new event that we're having in April 18th and 19th. This is, again, another stepping stone for our new admitted students. This is a true collaboration with Academic Affairs. So the students that are admitted and they're going to be joining us in the summer or fall are going to be invited back to the campus at Venice or Bradenton to meet with their career coach, their success coach, and also meet with the academic department. So I know Dr. Kiefer's been working closely with my team, and students will be able to come in and learn more about their degree path, more about their programs. It's also a great opportunity that in November when I applied and I wanted to do this, but I just found out what that actually meant, I can switch and I can learn about that program, and it's not that fear. So we're trying to really do a seamless handoff and continue that engagement. And then in June, we'll have 3 open houses again. All summer long, we're recruiting. We're still looking at those last-minute decision makers, so we will have those going through the entire summer. The last piece I really want to highlight, too, is our visits and tours. Our counselor breakfast that we held here in the room was packed. I think we had 45 counselors come in person for breakfast. And one of the big takeaways that they told us is transportation to come here. The availability to come and bring a group of students to tour campus. So here are some of the highlights. We've had our high school visits, that's us going out into the community. This was a little bit a while ago, so the numbers increased, but we've had 62 high school visits in multiple forms. So senior seminars, application workshops, FAFSA workshops, classroom visits, but we are out and about and getting toward schools. The other piece is the number of tours we've seen. I've highlighted just a few. We've had M2C, Manatee Technical College Preview, so they're graduates. Come on in, let's see how you can continue your education. We've had our Venice Girls Inc., Booker Middle School. I believe that's who's in the picture right now with our basketball coach and our athletes. But we engage our entire college community when we have tours on campus. If we can engage with faculty, athletes, clubs, orgs, we want to get these students inspired so that they see us as their next step. So it has been busy.
Go back to this challenge, you say, of transportation. Mm-hmm. They have kids that want to come to visit, but they can't get here. Is that what I'm hearing?
So the school districts to provide funding for a bus to bring them for a tour. And a lot of the families struggle, from what we've heard from counselors, to find the time to get their students here for tours. One good piece of news is that we did receive from the Sarasota Foundation a grant, $16,500 for our project zip code, which will allow us to provide transportation to a school district to have them come and engage with us in learning about higher education. So we are looking to help our school districts alleviate that barrier.
And we, I assume we do this, but have we taken our show to them?
Yep.
But so those, it's not as effective as bringing to our campus?
Right. We want to do both, right? We want to get in front of them and help reiterate the messages they're hearing, but we also want them to walk and feel and see themselves being a student here, see the classroom. During this visit, our coach, one of the questions said, can you dunk a ball? And that was the whole talk of the tour. We saw someone dunk a ball. And it was, all right, if that's what's going to catch your attention, we'll take it right now. But those were middle schoolers. So it was great to expose them and then have them go home and talk about it to their families. So those are just a few highlights of what we're doing.
So this is just tangentially related, so it's something anybody could answer, probably I should know. Do we have an app that students can download and use, and potential students? So I know we're online, we've been online for a long time doing stuff, and applying online, but they can download the app and everything from their application process through all of their school years, and everything is all on one downloadable app for their mobile phone.
Yes and no. We have an app right now. We're working to streamline more capabilities. So students can go through and see a lot of the functionality. Not everything right now is mobile friendly. So there's bits and pieces to it that they can do. We are onboarding a new customer relations management software that may help to streamline some of those barriers. So it's not a one-stop shop for our app right now.
I don't know how high a priority that should be, but when you're talking, you know, Gen Z to millennial, that whole group, right, our older students and the younger students,
right.
I mean, they often live on these things.
Right.
And that's how they think. And a computer online, a computer is like, ugh. But even going to a website on this is really clunky compared to the same functions within an app.
Right.
And it's got to do with coding stuff. I don't understand, but I know that's true. So I don't know how big a priority that should be, but it seems like it would be worth.
It definitely is. It's still part of our conversation.
All right.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Other questions? Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Great work.
If I may, a second. I do have the answer to that question regarding the growth in the Hispanic population over that time frame. It's been less than 1% total growth in the population while at the same time.
Good?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I have the very good opportunity to share our healthy financial news this evening.
Side arrow.
Something. And you're financially healthy enough to buy new clothes. Financial highlights. The highlights for you this evening. Our total assets have increased $4.2 million. That's mostly due to new construction during the last period. Liabilities increased $4.1 million. That's the remainder of the construction dollars that were not expended during the year. Net deferred inflows and outflows are down slightly. And our total net position increased 2% or $2.6 million. Capital assets went up $10 million. That was the spa, the new science building, and the renovation of Building 8. Restricted funds went up as well, and that's mostly due to the HERF funding that we've received from the federal government. And unrestricted funds increased a negative 3.2 to a negative 4.9. I've got arrows by that because I want to remind everyone and share with our new trustees that the government required us, starting in the middle 2015s or thereabouts, to include the unfunded portion of the state pension plan, and that's what affects this. So the state of Florida has funded about 80%, which is a very good place to be, unlike states like Illinois and other that are at 30%, and it's a problem for them. Here, with in-migration, and tourism, I don't see any issues with that, though we are required to carry it, so it shows it's a big deal. Our net position at the beginning of the year increased last year about a little less than $1 million, and this year, 2.6. We talked in the fall, in September, about the fund balance in the last month. This is the same information. Our unrestricted fund balance is just short of $15 million. Our unexpended plant, which is Fund 7, has about $18 million in it. A portion of that's committed to projects, and a portion is reserved for future projects. You'll see again that Fund 9, the investment in plant, went up about $2 million from 87 to 97, and that's the effect of it. There's something new in the financials this year. It's called the Consolidated Financial Index. And this was created in the early 2000s by Pete Marwick and the state of Florida is just now adopting it. It has four components. Those are the reserve ratio that lets us know whether our resource reserves are sufficient, net operating ratio, are we functioning within our available resources, return on net assets, and viability ratio is our capacity to pay debt. We have zero debt, so that number is not included in our capital ratio. For the State College of Florida, that number is 4.74. The experts say that you should have a score of 3 to represent financial health. Anything over 7 is extremely good and ready to move on to the next project. You'll see in 2017, we were at 7.42. We moved money at that point to our capital projects, and that's why you see the drop in it. That was money that was still available to us and remains, and we vote on that every year as soon as we do a project. Questions? Any questions? Well, that's the financial report in short. I'm always available, as is our controller, Mr. Mark Sturko, sitting in the back of the room for any technical questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Good news. Moving on to the non-financial consent agenda, is there anything that anyone would like to remove for discussion? I'll take a motion.
I move approval of the non-financial consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes, or consent agenda passes. And the motion to other. All right, moving on to the financial consent agenda. Anything anyone would like to remove? Discussion?
I move for adoption.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Agenda passes. Now, I hope everybody saw the project list at the back of our book that we asked for at the last board meeting. I, for one, think it's really helpful to see it all on one spreadsheet, and you know, really gives us a better perspective on where we stand. And it certainly helps to see our positive financials just presented by Julie too. Any discussion on that item? All right. Thank you for providing that. And it appears that we will now move on to facilities. Oh, there you are.
Do you feel like it is a new commission of facilities every month? So if you're looking at board packet on my board memo, start on page 145, got quite a bit of information to go through this evening. So we have the furniture for the Venice Cleveland School monitors for contract approval. We have the dental hygiene upgrades, which are called the first 5. That's both a budget increase and a contract approval. We have our HVAC upgrades, our indoor air quality project pairs. That's a major budget increase. And then two of our separate CARES projects. We've got CARES 1, which is building 16714 CIT and 100. I'll talk more about that. That's contract approval. And finally, our Venice chiller plant upgrades. That's CARES 2. That's contract approval. So for the furniture for the Cleveland School modulars, we did that and it's advertised, received competitive bids. You can see services came in low at 129,394.65. I think we're carrying $139,000 budget on that. We're in good shape. So I'm looking for board approval to contract the commercial design services.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. That's a really tight grouping of kids there. Wow.
The difference is really in the install piece of it.
Mm.
Okay, the next one is the dental hygiene upgrades. This is both a budget increase and contract approval. So the board approved this particular project. If you remember, the board also approved early release of the dental hygiene equipment at an incredible lead time. That's for the first team of the existing stations, plus we added three new at increased capacity. We're utilizing John Swift Construction as our CM on this one. And design was completed, advertised, received competitive subcontractor bids. Evaluated general conditions, overhead, profit. In this market, we find the pricing to be fair and reasonable. So requesting board approval to contract with John Swift for $575,045.29. So included, we increased the scope. We added three additional dental hygiene stations. Those three additional stations plus the facility infrastructure to support them added $200,000 to the project. So requesting board approval to also increase the project from $1 million to $1.2 million. There is adequate CARES money, and we did go back and get federal authority to approve that $1.2 million.
And so the cost overrun has been approved and CARES money through the CARES money.
Yes.
Move approval on John Swift, 575-045-29.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
And move approval on the budget from $1 million to $1.2 million.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, thank you. All right, this is a play here. So in September 21, the board approved CARES funded HVAC projects at $4,515,000. What that included is CARES 1, 2, and 3. Again, CARES 1 is the building 16714 CIP and 100. We're bringing that GMP to this board, so we'll talk about that one and follow up with it. CARES 2, which is the Venice Chiller plan upgrade, that GMP is in the board packet. We're looking for approval on that one. CARES 3, which is the underground hot water piping and condenser water piping replacement. Plan is to bring that in to the paper board. So it's those three elements that made up that 4.515 budget. What's not included in there was the CARES 5, which is the dental hygiene, 1.2 million. So that might have been a little bit confusing. So last month I shared the project list with the board. For these three, CARES 1, 2, and 3, I was carrying a $6.8 million budget based on either it was a 50% design estimate or detailed design cost estimate. So in the last 30 days, we got three CMs working these CARES projects. They went out and they got competitive pricing. They actually came in less. They came in $626,405.24 less. So instead of the $6.8 million, we're now at $6.18041.76. I do want to just pause here, and so between the three CMs we got working the CARES, and then our fourth CM is Tandem, who's working the batting cages in the science building at Venice. All four of those CMs have come back to us and said SCF is absolutely requiring the most stringent procurement processes between Mandy County, Sarasota County, the school boards, the universities, and the college system. So what we're requiring as a dollar threshold of what you're advertising, what we're requiring from competitive bids, and a dollar threshold that a college facility staff has to be present when you open those bids. I'm not going to say the four CMs are swarming, but we are absolutely forcing due diligence on trying to get the most competitive pricing that we can in this part. And I think this bears a little bit of that. So
that's a good thing, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah. not for them.
We got a couple, one squirming a little bit more than the others, and we'll see how that gets forward. So requesting board approval to increase the budget by $1,664,505.76, or about 37% increase. If you think about when we put these budgets together last summer, and what the market's been doing, 37% is about what the market is bearing right now, unfortunately. So we do have adequate CARES funds, and we have brought this amount back to the federal authority for approval.
The GMs have got the bids in, and that's how you came up with the exact number, or is this a preliminary number that's going to change when the actual bids come in?
So the next two board memos, for the CARES 1, I got that GMP in, looking for approval on that one. CARES 2, for Dennis Chiller, we got that GMP in. My third CM, you're struggling a little bit. It's the CARES 3. We're struggling getting their bids in a timely manner and getting their GMP to us on bringing that to the 8th report. But we did get the bids in. We know what their GMP is. They just haven't assembled it. So I'm very confident we'll be within the 6.1 million.
So you're looking for a motion to increase the budget by 1.664 and to the total project to 6.1.
Right, so we're looking to go from 4.515 million with the board through to September to the 6.180.76.
That would be two different motions, one to increase the budget and one to approve the budget, or just approve the budget?
We're just increasing it from the 4.5 to the 6.1.
Okay.
Do we have to do it at 6.180, or can we just do it at 6.2 in case you have a couple hundred dollars difference and you want to come back?
That'd be great.
Okay.
And if we did that, there would still be CARES money for that?
Yeah, we're in good shape at the 6.2.
So you said on the previous one that the CARES money had been approved for it, but you said on this one it's in the process. Is that right?
No.
Or is this approved?
So actually when we thought we got our estimates in, and we weren't at 4.5 or 6.8, and that's what we shared with the project list. We got with Julie, and we presented that to the federal approving authority, and it's itemized. And they approved the 6.8.
Oh, okay.
So now we're actually growing within 600,000. We're in good shape for that.
Yeah, I move approval on $6.2 million.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Okay, now the individual CARES projects. Saw in the pack this morning, was talking about this particular project. CARES 1 is a piece of the project. So the board approved this project. Again, it's buildings 1, 6, 7, 14, that's the Reagan campus. CIT, that's Lake Ranch campus. And building 100 is Venice campus. Other than building 100, we're going to execute all this work in an operating environment. So all the CMs and their subcontractors have had to assemble their pricing and come up with the logistics of how to pull this off and not interrupt academics, student services, and the rest of the world that we're tapping into. So we're utilizing John Smith Construction. Same thing. Design's been completed, advertised, got competitive subcontractor bids in. The pricing is fair and reasonable for the market. We're requesting board approval of the contract with John Swift for $2,920,471.01.
Now, is that in the 6.2 we just approved?
Yes.
Okay, so this is just a breakout.
Yeah. That was the budget approval. Now I'm looking at the contract approvals.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to approve John Swift Construction at $2,920,471.01.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No, Chris, can I just ask you a question? It has nothing to do with the approval. Timing. So we're playing with air conditioning, am I right? And a chiller on the next one that you're getting ready to talk about. So are they going to be done in summer?
No. So the chillers have a 36-week lead time. That's going to put us kind of the first of November time frame. Worst case scenario, the Venice chiller, I think they say push to June 30 before we have to have the expense. worst case, I'm pushing into probably 1st of February.
When it's a little cooler, I mean.
Yep, yep. And the rest of this is a kind of an August through December 31 time frame. The CMs, the way they scheduled, got their subcontractors lined up. Even though they extended the completion of spending the money, there's no way we're going to put off the gas when you've got that amount of infrastructure set up to deliver kind of that August through December 31 time frame.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, last item. This is the Mills Shore Clean Upgrade. Again, the board approved it. We're utilizing Will Smith Construction. Same thing, been advertised, competitive bids. The pricing is fair and reasonable. Requesting board approval to contract with Will Smith for the $1,497,823. And this amount, again, itemized, was approved by the federal authorities.
I move for the approval of Will Smith.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Alright. Back to our agenda. We are moving on to some old business with the President's rules.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You see in your packet, Exhibit T, page 150, the version of the goals. Thanks everyone who provided me some input into the last discussion that we had at last meeting. Where we ended was that we really wanted to be responsive to the fact that we really need to focus on enrollment, and particularly very specific areas where we think we have opportunity. The goal that we dropped was the persistence and retention. As Ryan mentioned, that is one where we actually are ahead of the national average, and our trend is looking good. That doesn't mean we're not going to do that work with our complete change, with our student success coaches. We're very focused on that, but we wanted our goals really to be looking at those very specific enrollment targets where we think we can make the biggest impact in this next year. Two of the goals that are not enrollment related are, first, back to the discussion we did have last time about reducing that time to recruit and hire, particularly our career employees. As you all know, it's a very competitive market, and the processes that we had really worked when it was a buyer's market, but it's not. And we have a number of people who we have in our pipeline who are accepting other positions before we get them through our processes. So we know we need to move that along, and we need to move that along much more quickly in this market. So that we left that in there as a goal. And then the last one is, assuming we don't have a veto, we have all the money in hand that we need to build that science building on our Venice campus, and what we do need to do is raise the money to ensure when we open that building, it has all the equipment and fixtures that we need. So the foundation is looking to us to establish that goal, and then at their meeting, they'll make that a priority. So those are the ones that we have in here. The other one that we took out was our effort to become that Hispanic-serving institution. Again, you saw the numbers. We're marching very quickly toward that goal. We're going to get there, we think, fairly organically anyway. And so that, in some ways, is a goal we think we're going to make without having to establish it here separately.
And that was 24%? Is that
25.
Okay.
Any
questions?
I just have one comment that I'd like to make. I completely agree that we always need to be working on enrollment. It is really our lifeblood, so to speak. But if indeed the performance-based model is changed, as we have offered and proposed to the Florida College Board, it's really going to be focused on persistence and retention. So in other words, how many are we graduating? You know, of students that are enrolling, how well are we doing at keeping them here and getting them out with a degree? Because that's really the thing that's going to benefit them the most. So I just think that over the next couple of years, we'll see where this goes. But we may have to really double down on persistence and retention, because that is really where we shine. It's how we serve our mission the best, and it's going to benefit us in the long run.
We love our students that come in the summer. It's great revenue generation for us. But the numbers that they track are fall to fall.
Okay.
So it's really that, you know, Ryan can speak more to the actual numbers that we're using, but it's looking at fall to fall. So those summer enrollments don't have an impact. The bad news is we really don't get any credit for that as an institution when they're looking at performance. So that's one of the disappointments, and it's hard to make one model that fits the college system because we have a considerable number of our students who are here to take a class that they need, and maybe that class is going to get them the promotion that they need at work. They're not here to get a certificate or to get a degree or a credential. And there's nothing in the system anywhere that rewards that kind of activity that we do at this point.
I'm not sure it wasn't like hurting our numbers.
No, it's not really nice. Good question.
All right. There's no further discussion. We'll move on to new business. Has everyone seen the proposed board schedule in the back? Are there any comments, questions, conflicts on that?
Just wonder if I want to go back to Lakewood Ranch.
That's a great question. I think you should go back to Venice.
Oh, I need an thank you, Susan. I guess I need an approval on the goals before we can
move on.
Okay.
Motion to accept the goals for 2022 and 2023.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion and the goals pass. All right. Moving on to new business again.
We would very much like to work back in the agenda, being able to get to Venice and get to Lakewood Ranch. We're dealing with kind of happy issues as it relates to that. One is that collegiate school on our Venice campus. We're going to be doing some work to expand and be able to bring in the ninth grade, but we're still utilizing that space quite considerably. So we'll see whether we're able to work that out. And also, interestingly enough, when the economy is as it is, we really excel in our non-credit workforce development side, and that's where we really utilize our space in Lakewood Ranch. So again, we're generating revenue there, and so we can look at maybe putting a meeting out there if we can work it around that schedule, maybe getting a meeting back at Venice if we can get around schedule, because I do think it's good for everybody to see all the campuses, but those are just the constraints that we're working with.
I guess we can't argue too much with that. But I assume we need
5 a.m. is available.
We're not going to argue with that.
Traffic will be great.
Right, do we need to vote on the board agenda or the board meeting schedule?
Yes.
So I'll accept the motion.
Move approval.
Second. Anybody?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Moving on to board comments, maybe we'll start with you, Taylor, and go around and walk.
Start with me. It's been really interesting trying to get my bearings. So I love the packet that it comes, that I'm able to read it in a timely manner, and I don't know.
Okay. I don't have a lot else to say other than, again, thank you for the project list. I think it's really, really helpful. And it was wonderful to see these experiments that we're doing in enrollment and that they're working. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, my comment as well, I mean, for both of you, great presentation. Keep up the good work and getting the word out to the students. We didn't applaud, we probably should have applauded. So great job.
I concur with that, and I think it's outstanding that we are taking on some very challenging physical projects that gonna pay dividends down the road. We're spending money wisely on infrastructure in a number of locations that if we didn't spend it now while we had the money, which would have really bit us in 4 or 5 years when we had the emergency to take care of it. If you were successful tomorrow, you're not free. What would be the ramifications to us? We have to start hiring them. I mean, is this gonna affect the fall schedule? I mean, when does all this kick in if you win?
Yeah, if we get approval tomorrow, which we're hopeful that will happen, we're
tomorrow
prepared.
Tomorrow we'll get our answer?
Tomorrow we'll have our answer. And then we're prepared to offer the first courses for the baccalaureate and education program starting in the fall. We'll immediately open a portal to pursue licensure for those programs, and that will happen, has to be submitted by July 15th in order to get approval as quickly as possible, and that would be retroactive. So if any students start prior to receiving approval for licensure, and that's what they need to be able to go in and be teachers. They need to be licensed to do that. So these will be licensure programs that will allow them to step into
so
the classroom.
So they will get a baccalaureate degree from us in 4 years?
Correct. Yeah, it's developed as a 2+2 program, so there are likely students in our pipeline right now that will want to step into the +2
okay.
component of that, and that's what we have prepared ourselves to be able to deliver starting in the fall.
And they will, if they graduate, they'll be able to teach in the elementary schools and the secondary schools?
So elementary education and exceptional student education cuts across K through 12.
Okay. Do we have on campus the instructors now, the professors, or we have to go out and hire within this?
We will have to hire some faculty. We have funding in the Baranczyk grant that we received to hire the initial faculty. And the plan is that the revenue that's generated from students signing up for courses we never offered before will help to sustain that. And we've been invited by Baranczyk to consider applying a second time if we need additional support to continue to grow the faculty support that we need to be fully staffed in that area.
How many, what is fully staffed? Eight?
We probably need six? 2 to 3 faculty total. Sort of depends on who we get and what their capabilities are. So it's hard to say, but I'd say a range of 2 to 4 maximum. To support both of those programs. We have some faculty on staff already that are able to contribute in that area. We're building from our successes in early childhood education, so elementary education makes a lot of sense.
I sure hope it's easier than finding construction people. It's impossible in construction. All right, thank you.
Good
luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, truly. I'm just, for Dr. Hale, your presentation earlier, so it's kind of oldish business from earlier in this meeting. I keep going through the numbers in my mind about the increase in Hispanic enrollment, which is awesome. And it went from 16 point something to 23 point something. And then Dom asked how much the Hispanic population overall grew then, and you said 1%. But that increase in our enrollment is whatever 7/16 is 40-some percent increase in a group that where it was 1% increase in the population, and I'm baffled by that. How is that possible? Other than the fact that we're super men and women at this, how is that possible? And if you don't have an answer, you just.
I think a lot of it is, over time we've done a lot of things here that have created increased exposure within that community to the process of college going. Our collegiate school began back in 2010, targeting specific areas. And we brought in a lot of Hispanic students, Hispanic families, and then those things just carry on. There's a lot of brothers and sisters from that come, even if they're, we're older. And I think just the more that a community begins to understand the process and how to get to and attain college degrees, the more that it tends to be on to see the success of others.
So the collegiate school thing, that actually makes a lot of sense. That's a real feeder group, probably.
I think also during that time we have more Spanish-speaking outreach. We have more of our materials available in Spanish. We have more of our media outreach in Spanish. So we've really made it a concerted effort to be on the radio stations in those areas where we're specifically reaching the community.
So if both those numbers being true, that's a pretty awesome storyline of success. I mean, that's almost eye-poppingly astonishing. Because you're talking about beating the market by 40 times, which is, or whatever that number would be. Julie, you should do it in your head. congratulations. I mean, that's just astonishing.
It sounds like a press release to me.
Well, when I said story, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Coming from two PR people. Yeah, congratulations.
I'm looking for something from my next article. So maybe
there,
that's it.
Perfect.
That's all I have.
Okay, any other comments?
I would like to, many people may not have met Brian Thomas. He's been our government liaison lobbyist, if you will, for the college. He's retiring. As a matter of fact, he's retiring. His last day will be Thursday of this week. And I just wanted to acknowledge it was largely through relationships and efforts that he has generated at the college, sort of creating our lobbying effort from nothing. Prior to he and I working together, we really didn't have anything in that regard, that we find ourselves in the good position that we're in this year. So I just wanted to congratulate him and thank him and wish him well as he moves on to full retirement. And then also commencement this year, our speaker is going to be Renee Gilmore. She is a media personality. She has her own Empowering Voices program as well. She is an entrepreneur. She was one of the very first dual enrollment students at the State College of Florida way back when. So she too is a alumni in that regard. So looking forward to her as our speaker this year.